Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for welcoming me into your community on this beautiful Sunday morning. It's a joy to worship with all of you today. And I'd like to check in with you a little bit. How are you doing? How is it with your soul this morning? In the light of heartbreaking events of the last few months, I know this year has been challenging. With an onslaught of bad news rolling in, I've had moments where I've felt helpless and insignificant as I've watched the events around the world unfold. A refugee crisis in Europe and the Middle East, domestic and international terror attacks constantly flashing across our news feeds, the senseless events in Orlando, police shootings in St. Paul and Baton Rouge, and the horrible attack in Dallas. Tensions are high, and the effects of hate and fear are bubbling up everywhere, even in our political system. It takes a lot of emotional energy to keep up with the rapidly changing headlines and process their associated grief. Sometimes I just need to take a break, to find people I care about, and just get away from it for a few hours in an afternoon. It was with this kind of break in mind that I drove to Richmond to spend an afternoon with the Reverend David Hicks McPherson. Reverend Dave is one of the oldest ministers in our denomination. He's kind of a legend. Originally a Universalist minister, he was a leader that helped facilitate our decision to merge Unitarianism with Universalism in 1961. Reverend Christina Hockman, the former intern minister at my home congregation in Newport News, Virginia, mentioned what a great resource he was and how much he loves talking with future ministers and suggested we spend an afternoon with him. Now, I kind of assumed this would be a breezy, lighthearted conversation, swapping stories about church life. I was thinking lemonade on a back porch with my grandpa, that kind of a day. However, if you've had the privilege of meeting Reverend Dave or hearing him preach, you'll know that that sort of lazy afternoon is not really his style. Instead, he told me stories about his life in the ministry. He talked about building congregations and his time as a young man in school to become a minister. And he told stories about his work as a minister of a predominantly white church during the Civil Rights Movement. He talked about building relationships with the black churches in his town. Apparently, he walked into one of those churches and said that his church wanted to help. He said, "You lead. You tell us what you need and what you want, and we'll try our best to make it happen." I got a little teary myself when he told me, with tears in his own eyes, that after building that relationship with this church, he was invited to pray with them the day after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. He told his stories from the trenches of a powerful and justice-seeking ministry, and he reminded me over and over again of what he sees as the ultimate work of Unitarian Universalism. He says that we have the power to transform the world and to build a heaven here on earth. His heaven, of course, is not so much a paradise in the sky, but a vision of our world without division, violence, or need. He reminded me that as people of faith, our job is to do the work of justice here and now. When we see hatred and racism, violence, fear, and greed overrunning our communities, we're reminded of how desperately we need changes, how we need to transform the world before it goes too far and everything we have crumbles around us. We then have a calling to do good in the world, which is why it is so frustrating when in the midst of this call to build heaven on earth, our good efforts, our best work, our honest, loving hearts trying to find meaning and make change seem to fall short and not be enough. One of my colleagues spoke to me about this struggle, asking, "What do? When you did the best you could, and it still isn't good enough, how do you see the world, or how do you see where the world is and off in the distance, where the world needs to be, and not despair a little bit? How do you sit with that chasm between what is and what is at all acceptable, and find hope in the tiny tiptoes forward? And how do you make any kind of change at all, when even the systems that facilitate change are stained with injustice?" These are the hardest questions. I think they're so challenging because we want to be the ones to move mountains and fix everything. We want the instant gratification of sharing that article or going to that protest to be enough to transform the world. Change is a slow agony for us. We are sprinters tasked with a marathon that we feel decidedly unprepared to run. It is in that slow frustration of making change that we must remember. Even though we have limits, we can do an awful lot of good in this world, and we must. I'm comforted that our siblings in faith also affirm this truth. Paul, one of the leaders of the early Christian church, is attributed as the author of a letter to the Christian community in Galatia. He writes, "If you sow to the Spirit, you will reap eternal life from the Spirit. So let us not grow weary in doing what is right, for we will reap at the harvest time if we do not give up. So then, whenever we have an opportunity, let us work for the good of all." Paul never says that the work is too hard and it isn't done yet, so I guess we should pack up and go home. He tells them that even in a world racked by violence and hate, choosing the good and serving the world is the only option. This quote from the book of Galatians seems to echo in a quote often attributed to John Wesley, one of the founders of the Methodist Church. He says, "Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can." If Wesley's words seem familiar, besides being often inscribed on plaques or needle-pointed onto pillows, they were featured in Hillary Clinton's presidential nomination acceptance speech at the Democratic National Convention this week. Many of us, I suspect, watched parts of the convention this week. You may have watched it live or joined me in watching the speeches on YouTube each morning after. I'm not going to turn this sermon into an opportunity to talk about the candidates or take too strong of a position about the politics of it all. Y'all will probably have that conversation anyways at coffee hour. But there was one moment of the convention that really stuck out to me. When each of the state's delegates announced their votes, a special honorary delegate was asked to speak for Arizona. Her name was Jerry Emmett. Jerry Emmett is the 102-year-old woman who was asked to speak aloud the votes cast for Hillary Clinton. Emmett reflected later how exceptional this moment was for her. When she was born in 1914, no women in the United States were allowed to vote in elections. Throughout her lifetime, she's seen the status and treatment of women change from that point of complete disenfranchisement to a time when a woman is now the presidential nominee of a major political party in our country. Though in issues of representation and fair wages, women still have progress to make, we now as a country recognize that a woman is capable of leading our nation. It makes me hopeful to think about Jerry Emmett's life. She remembers fondly when her mother exercised her right to vote for the first time. Emmett was 6 years old. Over her lifetime, whether she personally participated or not, she saw feminism take hold in our country. The jobs and lifestyles available to women became more and more varied. As a middle-aged person, she saw the civil rights movement and the passage of the Voting Rights Act that gave women of color their first real opportunity to exercise their right to vote. And now in November, provided she stays in good health, she will get to cast her ballot for a female president. A little confession to make, this is the first presidential election that I'm eligible to vote in. I turned 18 5 months after the election in 2012, not bitter at all. So for me, I will never have voted in an election where women weren't viewed as legitimate candidates. I'm separated by less than 100 years from a woman who was born into a world where women weren't even trusted enough to vote. That's where I'm finding hope this week. In the space between where we are and where we need to be, though not filled, the gap has gotten so much smaller. Over years and years and tiny steps forward. This is one example of what building the world we dream of, building heaven on earth, looks like. We are getting closer and closer to a world where my identity as a woman is not a disadvantage. This is a reminder of how important it is to keep moving forward even when the small steps don't feel like they're doing enough. I'm seeing the change. It does come. As Unitarian Universalists, we believe what Martin Luther King Jr. said, that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. It does bend, painfully slowly at times, through unjust systems sometimes, in decades or in lifetimes, it does bend. The good news of Unitarian Universalism is not just about a force of love and goodness working in the universe and bending the arc for us. I believe in that kind of a force of love, but whether we believe in this kind of power or not, our good news is not that this power might be real and might be moving in the world. Our good news is that this power might be us. In our individual and collective action, working slowly in our own lifetimes and laying the foundation for the work of future lifetimes, we are the goodness that is bending the arc and creating heaven on earth. Our faith calls us to the frustrating, heartbreaking, life-changing work of transforming the world. We are called to see the problems in our society, those injustices that we can no longer stand to bear, and to take action. I'm really proud of my home congregation, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of the Peninsula down in Newport News. 3 weeks ago, after the deaths of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, the pain of racial injustice became too much for our congregation to bear any longer. They decided to listen to the call of the Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism organizing collective and hold a safe space for people of color to gather and mourn in our sanctuary. But they didn't just invite the people of color already in our community. They printed flyers and put them on the doorsteps of the apartment complexes behind our building, communities consisting mainly of people of color that we live so close to, but rarely interact with. And on a Sunday afternoon, they held this space. Only a few people came, and many people, both in our congregation and the community, were confused and angry about a predominantly white church holding an exclusively black space. Yet for those who came, the white people who sat outside their sanctuary to welcome and protect that space, and the people of color who bravely trusted our church enough to enter, that moment was transformational. The distance between where we were and where we wanted to be, a world of inclusion, love, and peace, well, that distance got a tiny step smaller that day. It didn't change the whole world, it didn't end racism or police brutality, but it was a step in the right direction. So, here we are. Our world is not the world we dream of yet. We see violence, hate, and fear every day. and we also see the progress. Laws change, rights are won, relationships are built, and trust is earned. We see an arc of justice bending and straining toward goodness. There is a force of love and goodness, a spirit of life moving in our world, and there's us, with our loving hearts and helping hands. Even when doing the good the world needs feels hopeless, because that distance between what we can do today and what needs to be done is so large, we must continue to move forward. We must take the small, tiptoeing steps. We must cast our votes and heal our communities. We must talk to one another, pray with one another, love one another. We must volunteer at the food banks and donate blood and do the recycling and have the hard conversations about discrimination and systemic racism, gender inequality, and transphobia. Let us not grow weary in doing what is right, for we will reap at harvest time if we do not give up. Reverend Dave McPherson has taught over and over that as Unitarian Universalists, we have the power and the responsibility to transform the world and build a heaven here on earth. In his life, he worked for justice and took as many small steps as he could toward that vision. He's a much older man now. He doesn't drive, and it would probably not be safe for him to stand at a protest or march in a rally in the hot Virginia sun. He knows his limits, and he knows that he will probably never see his vision of heaven on earth come to fruition in his lifetime. Time and ability are his limits, and yet with grace and confidence, he's outliving those too. His small step is teaching younger people, often young, soon to be ministers, about our call as Unitarian Universalists. With fiery enthusiasm and a slightly out of place down here Boston accent, he's reminding a new crop of ministers to preach our task as you use to take the world we see in all its beauty and brokenness and turn it into the world we dream of. That makes you part of this legacy too, so congratulations on that. Beloved friends, we cannot know what the future will hold, and we cannot do everything ourselves. Let us be a community of individuals doing all the good we can for all the people we can, for as long as ever we can. Let us be the force of good that bends the arc of the universe ever so slowly toward justice, and let us not be satisfied with waiting another 100 years to make meaningful change. Let us work hard and fast to build this world we dream of. Let our legacy be one that overcame our own limits and frustrations in order to take courageous steps forward. We are that people, so brave and so bold. Let us go out in peace. Amen and blessed be.